Hi, I'm Steve Martin. Welcome to Unreal Bluegrass. Second hour, we're going to talk to John McEwen. That's right upon us right now. John McEwen has a brand new album, The Newsman, a man of record on Compass Records. We're going to talk to John about how that came about. It's a fascinating collection. But everything John does is fascinating, in my opinion. We're going to play first Old Rivers from that brand new Newsman album. Then we'll talk to John, and he'll direct us back to another great tune. You're going to enjoy this, John. McEwen is just one of my all-time favorite human beings, and this will be his 12th and even dozen appearance on Unreal Bluegrass. He's always happy to provide new information and more stories and talk about books and albums, and now he has a new album. It's like something I've never heard, but I love every bit of it. Thank you so much for tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass. To the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard a tune, Old Rivers, which is, we'll talk about the tune a little bit, a lot maybe. It's on a brand new release, The Newsman, A Man of Record, which is on Compass Records, done by one of my favorite people, my guest today, John McEwen. How are you doing, John?
Oh, thank you. That's a nice introduction. One of your favorite people.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. And I don't have a lot of favorite people, but you're always...
Let me say this, Steve. I've always appreciated the attention you've given my stuff, my music. Because, you know, it's amazing. So you're one of my favorite people.
There you go. There you go. On the new album, there are 11 cuts. Talk a little bit about Old Rivers. It winds up being a familiar. You got to think way back to the days. And we may be too old for people to follow us on this, for Walter Brennan.
Well, when I first heard Old Rivers, it was a Walter Brennan. In 1963, I wasn't even playing music yet, and it just really struck me. It was like, man, I wanted to hear that again. I wanted to hear that again. I didn't go out and buy the single, but I never bought a single before.
And you probably didn't download it off of anything.
Oh, right.
Go ahead, John.
But one of these days, I'm going to climb that mountain, walk up there among the clouds, and it just sounded like such a wonderful space to go to that I was working on this album, thanks to the Newsman by Tom Hanks. Do you remember that movie?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it's where the guy goes around the country in the 1800s and talks about all the news from different parts of the world. It was like I saw that, and I got to finish my Newsman album. Not to coincide with the movie, but just because I had to finish it. I worked on this album over a period of 10 or 12 years.
Wow.
And collecting stories. I don't have enough. Oh, I'm going to record Old Rivers. And that was really fun because that's the most recent one. I did that in a couple hours in my studio and knocked it out and stuck it in, and there it is.
and part of this, the 11 cuts on Newsman, A Man of Record, the actual title of the album, are 11. There's one instrumental that I count as Jules' theme. I understand the motivation for it, so I want to talk about that in a little bit. But so everything, there are a couple tunes that kind of have more singing and more instrumentation, but certainly Old Rivers and a lot of these, the cuts are really I would call them, I don't know that I would say recitations. I mean, is that fair? But I mean, you're bringing to life poetry and words, and you're surrounding them with music very gently, except for maybe Fly Trouble, which is actually a song that you're going to sing. But
it's a real challenge because spoken word has been around for a long, long time, and there used to be in the 30s there was spoken word thing. And starving to death on a government claim from 1888.
Yeah.
I recorded that on my Wild West album, but that was a spoken word album, that song. But Hank Williams Sr., The Fly Trouble, and Alice's Restaurant, and some other ones that came along. Boy Named Sue.
That
one?
Oh yeah.
Devil Went Down to Georgia and King Tut. King Tut was
that's right.
And the Dirt Band was the band on King Tut.
That's right. I remember that. And I know why.
I
know why you were. Yeah.
When I was a young man, I never thought I'd see him. You know, it's like King time. And Garrison Keillor, he had quite a career out of doing talking stories and stuff. And I just thought it was a challenge to do a story and put music to it. And it's like scoring a movie. And that's... Yeah, well, go ahead.
Listen, John, you know I'm very informal. I would talk to you like this if we were sitting at a table somewhere drinking coffee. I just kind of, these conversations, they just sort of develop, and I'm always happy with. So, we were talking about the different, the vocal natures of the tune. Now, the Mountain Whippoorwill, when you mentioned The Devil Goes Down to Georgia, that's an earlier version of kind of that kind of a tune as far as being a musical contest. I did not know that it was a 1928 cut. And you also did a version of that on the Made in Brooklyn album, didn't you?
I borrowed it from that album. I called the guy and I said, I just want this to get more exposure. And it was a live, like a lot of these cuts were first take anyway. And it was a live cut recorded in a church in Brooklyn, and it was really neat to get the room echo and stuff.
Well, and I remember, too, John, you had a very special, I'll say a microphone recording thing going on.
That had some people say, we have $100,000 for the mics. Well, this one microphone was $150,000. And you'd use one microphone to record the whole band. Gathering around it, and that was an album called Made in Brooklyn. It featured people like David Bromberg and Andy Gessling from Railroad Earth, and Martha Redbone, and
the King Tut guy was on there too.
Yeah, Steve Martin played on his phone for sure.
I didn't know
that was fun. The record company president guy Norman Chesky says, I got the check for Steve, but you're going to have to give it to him. I can't give him a $250 check. No, I'm sorry, but you're paying him.
I remember you. I remember when we talked about the Made in Brooklyn album, which I don't want to detract from what we're talking about here. The newsman, a man of record. You told me about the fact that he'd come in and I'm going from memory here, John, but it's somewhere on my website that he had to. Steve was a very quick. I'll say read as far as relearning the key of a tune that he had learned and to play on the album. I forget which one it is, and I should have known that, thinking it might have gone this way. But I remember you talked about the Made in Brooklyn, but I don't remember it being, again, 1928. We talked about a lot of these cuts, and maybe we did, but so you're really going back and getting these older stories.
Yeah, the first one is written in the Civil War days. The Killed at the Ford was written by Longfellow, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. And the music I found that I thought was appropriate was a chopped-up version of Vacant Chair, which was written in 1858. It was written in 1865, Vacant Chair. And it's, we shall meet, but we shall miss him. There will be one vacant chair. And about somebody that didn't make it through the Civil War. And Jennifer Warren sings a beautiful line in that.
I have a note to ask you whose voice that is, so now you've told me.
and it's a wonderful marriage of an old song with an old poem. And I went, that's it. I just got to cut it, and I had to edit and move things around a bit. But that was really fun. I really enjoy editing, and it worked out.
It does work out. Here's something that I like your music. I like the way, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, John McEwen, I like the way your mind works. Now, that's saying a lot. But I like your approach to things, and I like the fact that on this new album, you aren't trying to limit things, and maybe there's no radio, but so you're not trying to limit the 3 minutes and 30 seconds. I mean, you have cuts on here that are 7-6 minutes long because that's how long they should take. So you're not trying to force these tunes into any special. I mean, they are as long as they are. I think that's the best way I can say it.
They're as written.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And Fly Trouble, that was a short song. That was only barely 3 minutes.
Well, but yeah.
It got its message across and was fun and cute and over. I played my best solos on that record, the guitar and lap steel. I was really proud of. And Mark O'Connor just fried on that song. He did it perfect fiddle.
Mark is Mark's one of those guys. You know, he just started playing guitar again. He's been on Unreal Bluegrass a couple of times, and after all these years, he decided I'm going to go back and play some guitar. And he's released some mind blowing guitar work that he does. But you know him. So how many of the cuts are you playing?
I hired Mark to go on the road with me. Oh, maybe 5 or 6 times when he was after the Dixie Dregs.
Yeah, okay. Right, I got it.
I wanted to get to know him, and we were in Steamboat Springs, and I went to sound check, and on the way there, I hear this Jimi Hendrix guitar just ripping, and it was just, I don't know what it was, some Hendrix thing that I recognized, and I got there, and it was Mark plugged into the mixing board with an acoustic guitar playing what he remembered of Hendrix, and this guy's good.
Yeah, I've heard from musicians in Nashville and other places that they're all really happy that he decided to just keep playing the fiddle and not go back and play everything else, because apparently he can play everything that well. And you know him, but you know he can play everything that well.
Oh yeah, and he's incredible. I haven't heard him play the banjo, thankfully.
Well, that's why maybe he'll stay off of that. So I wanted to ask you, and I got distracted, but of the 11 cuts on here, are you playing instruments on how many? All of them?
Well, on 10 of them.
Okay.
And, I did all the music on a couple, and then me and a keyboard player, Walt Freemason and Sam McGee, and Nui Ba Dinh, which is about a battle in Vietnam. That was a keyboard player named Chris Caswell. He's a
okay.
You see his name on Strange Records. He's been Paul Williams, the songwriter, singer. He's been his musical arranger and co-writer kind of for 30 years, 35 years. But he also has worked with rock bands, and Chris is a real genius. And he adds the orchestral sounds and keyboard. And David Hoffner, who's my buddy in Nashville. David Hoffner and I got an Emmy nomination for a film score we did together in the 90s, and that was really exciting.
That's what John... And if you're just tuning in, I'm talking to John McEwen, and he makes films, he does film scores, he does music, he writes books, which I've read both of them at length and enjoy the heck out of both of them. And,
thank you.
I would recommend them to anybody, and you could hear... By the way, in the newsroom, which is the newsman... which is the title cut. You describe that in writing in one of your books before you ever got around to recording it. When you talk about this.
Well, that's what I had it as a story in the book, and I went, this has got to be put on a record. This has got to be, I know what to do. And anyway, I found a way to do it and just basically told the story behind with music. And it was. I just wanted to get some publicity for that guy, the newsman guy who was a crippled man that would start at 5 in the morning and drive his newspapers all over Hollywood, selling them to people in restaurants, and he got into all the big businesses, like the number one agencies and managers and people such as that, you know, and. Would you like to buy a paper? You know, he spoke weird, but anyway, Steve, the newsman, was quite an inspiration. My gosh, that guy. Anybody that thought they had a hard job, go see if you can do his job. I bet you can't. And well, he has handicaps, you know.
And the cut of the newsman starts off with. You're talking about just very recently having been in the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, and you're trying to get some more exposure. And I think maybe that's the beginning of it. If you feel a little down, you see this guy working hard, and he winds up he winds up being, I guess, revered. He can go into any office and deliver a paper, and they're all expecting him. But go ahead.
He was not, I don't know if he was revered, but he was, at the end of it all, he had something that nobody had for even each other, and that was respect. Everybody respected
that's
him.
A much better choice. Yeah.
And he was really respected for the fact that he would do his job, and a simple job that it was, but he did it well. And he didn't get the good parking space. But, you know, they didn't have handicapped spaces yet.
Yeah, that's right.
But anyway, it's his story, and I'm glad I could figure out a way to tell it.
You know, it's one of those stories, and maybe we've all come across people like that. I hope that we have, maybe different circumstances, but we've recognized in individuals a truth into what they're doing and the fact that they're doing their job very well under all circumstances. And I think it also says, John, that do your job as well as you can, and people are going to notice. Not that he was trying to get noticed. He was just delivering the news. But I think it speaks to all of us should do that task that we're set to do.
Why do it halfway? Why do it mediocre? You know, you may as well do it the best you can and see where it takes you.
The 11th cut is just an instrumental tune. It's called Jules Theme. I know the inspiration of it, but it's just a very beautiful, I would say haunting, except there's so much of on the album that is haunting with the cremation of Sam McGee and so many of these tunes. but the very last cut, which is not a spoken word.
Well, I wanted to put an instrumental on, and I wanted to put that one because that's my, I hope to get in place. I hope to get it placed in a film someday as a main theme, and it will work as a theme because, well, I've been very lucky. I've done 14 little film scores, and I know what can work, and I know this can work, but it's such a tough business, so I thought I'd put it on this and get some exposure for it and see if some filmmaker likes it or whatever, you know? And I played piano, guitar, and bass on it. And
who's playing the horn?
The oboe is being played by a girl named Ellen. And she was working for me as an assistant in New York.
That's pretty.
But she was an oboe student at Juilliard.
Huh.
And she's now second chair in some orchestra. But anyway, I says, hey, you ever recorded before? No, I haven't. Would you like to? Yeah, sure. So she was great.
That's and really pretty.
She added something that that song really needed, I think. And I love the fact that when I play this song live on stage, I play the piano, and it goes over better than anything. I think it's the trick of me playing the piano might be part of it.
You think nobody expected that.
Well, no, they don't. But if they heard me play the song after this on piano, they'd say, where's the piano player?
Well, it's beautiful. And it's great that you're, what a beautiful haunting tune to have on the soundtrack.
That's an example of a song that I recorded the piano at a wonderful studio in Nashville when I was doing Steve Martin's album, The Crow, and which we won a Grammy for.
Absolutely.
I produced that album, and as I booked an extra hour so I could go in early before Steve got there and play the piano part, because they had this great piano. I mean, this was like a Bridge Over Troubled Waters piano, you know, and anyway, so I took that basic and then took it to New York and had her add the oboe and then put on the bass and the guitar over the next year and finished it up.
It's a great way to end the album, and it's just a great Jules theme, and I just really enjoyed it. I kept thinking, well, this is really pretty, and there's no storytelling other than what the music presents.
If you have a story that you think fits, tell it. Tell it with that as a backup.
I'll do that.
It takes kind of a sad story, but, you know, But that's why it's on there. It's for people to tell their own story to.
Well, listen, we've talked about a lot of the cuts. I'm going to have you introduce one before I let you go. But you mentioned the Hank Williams Fly Trouble, which is just one of those fun songs, and it's one that you're going to sing on. Reminds me so much and I don't know where Doc Watson got Life Gets Tedious, but part of it kind of reminds me of that type of a thing, that there's nothing there's nothing the guy can do except, you know, chase a fly or close the door or open the door.
Well, Hank Williams recorded this in 1948, and as Luke the Drifter, he took the persona of Luke the Drifter for Talking Blues, because he had things that he wanted to record, and they weren't all songs. And so this one came up, and when I started playing, I did a couple of Luke the Drifter things, like, that's not important. Well, the first song I learned was, "Every time I come to town, the boys keep kicking my dog around." And it makes no difference if he is a hound. They got to quit kicking my dog around. And
I don't have that, John, by the way. I don't have that song.
Oh. Well, I haven't recorded that yet.
Well, okay. Do that, and then I'll have it.
But then I learned, well, again, before I was playing music, I learned, "Well, you got trouble, my friends, right here in River City." "Why, sure, I'm a billiard player. Certainly mighty proud to say I'm always mighty proud to say it." You know, from Music Man.
That's right.
"Now, friends, let me tell you what I mean. You got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 pockets in the table. Pockets that mark the difference between a gentleman and a bum with a capital B, and that rhymes with P, and it stands for pool." And it was just really a fun thing to do. Preston was so perfect on that. But then music, I started playing the guitar at 17 years old. And I needed to have some songs. So I learned, "Every time I come to town, the boys keep kicking my dog around," because I couldn't sing then. Well, I can't sing now.
I don't know.
So I talk. I sing sometimes, but there's some songs I can deliver and I feel comfortable doing, because it's just feel comfortable doing it. They're okay. But I'm not going to win a Grammy being a singer, you know. But, you know, there's a chance I could get nominated for, which I hope can happen for this album, in the spoken word category.
See, that's a perfect place for it, John. That's perfect. That has to happen. We have to make that happen.
I wish I could figure it out. You know, I'm going to figure it out. How to get submitted to the right places. And Compass Records put this album out. Thank you, Allison. She didn't know what she was getting. I think it's a lot better than she thought it was going to be. Because I've gotten some good attention. I've got an article in People magazine coming out.
I saw that. How cool is that? When will we be able to read that? You mentioned that. Sunday it comes out. Yeah, I think I'll find it. I don't normally pick that up, John, but I will for you.
It's people.com.
Yeah,
I'll be having it too.
Okay, all right.
You won't have to pick it up. You can just be one of the 87 million people that
read
it.
John, if you're in it, I'm going to buy. I want the physical copy. If you're in it, I'm going to buy the physical copy. That's just, you know.
All right.
Hey, listen, on the album we've been talking about, you have, we've talked already about Killed at the Ford, but.
Killed at the Ford, yeah.
Yeah, you've got two tunes on here that are War, and War's Never Happy. The Red Clay, and also the tune, the Vietnam tune, the Nui Ba Den, I will pronounce it, from 1968.
Nui Ba Den.
Yeah, okay. And
that was really compelling. It was written by a guy that was at the battle in Vietnam, and he wrote it with his brother, who was living in Massachusetts. When he got back, his brother said, "Let's put that down. Let's write this all down. Let's get this right." And anyway, it's from a guy, told by a guy that was actually there. And it was really, Thomas Monroe sent me the letter with that in it, saying, "I wrote this with my brother. It's about his experience in Vietnam you think you could make it into a song?
Wow.
I sat around for 8 years, and I couldn't. I'd read it, and I'd be, gosh, so depressing.
It is, yeah.
But then I realized I need to do this because
we have to make war depressing.
Yeah, it's hard to make it happy.
Yeah, yeah. That's a whole different reason. But so we have to reflect exactly what was going on then. And Red Clay is I have more about the Civil War. Soldiers are dying, and there's all kinds of. You've picked out some pretty heavy war tunes, war poems to put into this album, which I appreciate.
I thought, well, okay, there's kind of 2.5 war related things, but it doesn't make it grandiose at all.
No.
It doesn't celebrate it, it just talks about how horrible it was. The dying men, the memories will never fade. You know, it was like, oh, those poor Vietnam guys, well, anybody that goes to war, I did not do any service, but anybody that goes to war has gone through things that just can't be described to a normal person.
And some of them, and John, some of them, they won't talk about it, and they appreciate the fact that you say, I appreciate this, but they don't talk about it. Especially, I'm talking about the Vietnam War. I didn't serve either. I was just a little too young, and then the lottery expired, and then the war ended, but I was in the lottery. But I never went either. But I'll tell you a quick story, John. You like stories, so let me just give you a quick version of two doors up from me where I grew up. The older brother went to Vietnam. And when he was in Vietnam, every week he wrote a letter back to his mother about the conditions, and it was put in a local newspaper. Remember, we used to have all little newspapers in our communities? So every week there was a new letter from a guy I knew very well writing back to his mother about Vietnam. And it was just heart-wrenching. And he gets out. He survives. He gets out. That's killer enough. But so a couple years later, his younger brother is going to be drafted and was drafted. So this gentleman who had gone already and survived two tours, signs up to prevent his brother from being drafted, and he goes back. And this is after we all know what he lived through, and I know this guy very well. We all watched him every week write a letter back to his mother about Vietnam. So in order to save his younger brother from going, he went back and did another tour. That still just blows my mind you know, what a sacrifice. And he was lucky to get out the first time, and he went back and, I thought, wow, I can never reach that level of courage, I don't think.
And now Vietnam is a great vacation spot.
Oh, I know.
Have you been to Vietnam? It is a wonderful place to shop.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, oh, come on.
Yeah, I guess we left them with marketing and commerce of some sort like that for selling. I don't know. I don't want to get too editorial about the wars that we've lived through, but that was my memory. And when I hear this song, I think about that because it's the only real connection that I had, that the guy up the street who I, two doors up, I remember this story like it was yesterday. It just really...
I was 17 years old, and I got a letter from the draft department saying, you need to report for your physical. And I went, this is about a year early. What's the deal? Oh, this is to Steve McEwen. This is that kid that spells his name the same. He lives a block away. I take the letter over to his house, and I give it to his mother. The next time I see his name is on the wall, wall.
Oh boy!
I'm pointing. I take my four of my boys to the on the road. It's 1 a.m, and I'm pointing at the wall. I said, "These are guys that didn't make it because." Well, it just happens that way. And one said, hey, Dad, look at where your finger's pointing. And it was randomly pointing at his name.
Really?
And I went and looked it up in the book there, and I was sure enough.
And that was
Garden Grove.
Holy cow.
And it was the guy. I gave his mother the draft notice.
Oh.
And what if I'd torn that up? Would it put him out of place by a few seconds, he would have missed that bullet or whatever. Oh, God, it was... Anyway.
Well, John, that's... So, Yeah, I mean, it's a great addition to the album, and I think it's very fitting the way that it's done. We've talked.
Thank you.
Yeah, we've talked about most of the cuts on here. One a bit more fun. Let's just go back up and talk about Pineapple John. let's talk about Pineapple John for just a second because of what he does to his guitar.
That was playing pickleball with your guitar is not a good idea.
No, not a vintage.
That's what he did. John Carter Cash wrote that. I recorded that out at the Cash Cabin Studio. I was working on a project for him, and he goes, "Hey, I got some poems that you might want to set music to." And I read a couple of them, and this is one I picked. This is, I'll come in next week and record Pineapple John. Okay. And I just sat down with my guitar. I'd rehearsed it and stuff and played it live. It was really fun.
There's another tune on here that has that Carter name attached to it, and it's I'll Be Glad When They Run Out of Gas. I finished the rest of the tune, but that just cracks me up.
I'll Be Glad When They Run Out of Gas was my country bumpkin guy. I'll be glad when they run out
That's
of gas.
Right. That's right. By the way, John, if you're listening, John McEwen, John does voices. He does different voices, and that's one of his accented ones that he puts in to make it exactly what you said.
I didn't know that till I did this album. People started telling me, "Where did you get all those voices?" So I don't know.
You should have said, "I've heard them my whole life." You mean you just now are?
They're ringing in my head. Oh man, and in Cremation of Sam McGee.
Yeah, let's get to that because I want to have you introduce that one, and then I'll let you go. I know I appreciate you so much, John, for making time. I know you've been through a hard spell, but you know you're still here, so I'm thrilled.
Yeah, I'm thrilled too.
So let's talk about the Cremation of Sam McGee because that is a spooky, and you do it in a real spooky way.
Well, my sister, who died at 23 many years ago from lupus, when I was in grade school, you know, fifth and sixth grade, I'd get her to read her favorite poem, which was Cremation of Sam McGee. She'd read it to me. And I did this for her, but I did it for me, too, because I love the story. And using different sound effects and some recording tricks, thanks to Pro Tools, where I took the harmonic playing. Harmonic is when you lay your fingers on the strings and make it sound kind of like a chime. And I went in and took out the pick sound. So it's just a...
Oh, okay. That's what that is. All right. Okay.
Just the strings humming.
Yeah, okay.
You know, the strings humming. And nobody's going to figure out what that is unless they hear this interview. And then there's some sound effects, and I like to play with sound effects, wind and fire and rain and stuff. But because that's in a frequency, it's not going to disturb the rest of the mix. You know, it's not.
Oh, okay. Well, all right.
When you pick sound effects, they're usually in a audio frequency that's not competing with the vocal or the instrumentation.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. All right.
And that's really fun. And then try to figure out how to put the music between the words, which is really important. Tommy Lee Jones told me once, I was doing a score for him called the film The Good Old Boys, and he called me up and said, "I really like that new piece you sent in." And the other one was, "Well, you know the one where Huey goes into the store? I think that's all wrong." All wrong? Yeah, well, what's wrong with it? And he said, "Anytime you start listening to music and not looking at the movie, you're detracting from the movie."
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
And I see what you're saying, Mr. Jones.
Yeah, it was too good. It was too good.
And I was like, "Yeah, I don't like that one either. In fact, I've started on. Let me send you this new one." I told the engineer, I said, after I hung up, I said, "We're not going to finish at 10 o'clock tonight. We're going to finish whenever we finish." I think it took me till about 3 o'clock to finish that cue and get it to him the next day. And it was a lot better. He was right. Mm-hmm. He was right.
The Cremation of Sam McGee, I have to tell you, John, is one of the creepiest things I've ever heard on a record. What that wasn't, you know, just telling the story. John's talked about the sound effects. I don't remember if it's on this tune or not, or this cut, but sometimes John goes between left and right if you're listening in stereo. But there's different things that happened in Sam McGee, the cremation, that it's just a spooky. I told you, it's like hearing someone tell the Telltale Heart. I mean, it's almost that spooky. If you get Vincent Price to read the Telltale Heart to you, and then you think about this, you're thinking, yeah, this is the guy just. He won't shut up about being cold, even when you found a place to cremate him. He's still he's in there talking about it. You know, shut the door at the end of it. I thought, man,
we're going to let in the storm.
That's right.
This is the first time I've been warm.
That's right.
Yeah, I used a repeat echo on that word warm, and then the piano hit right after it. This is the first time I've been warm.
Well,
that's one of my favorite parts.
Love that. And so the listeners, that's the build-up to it. The listeners are going to hear that tune as I let you go. And John McEwen is just one of my favorite people, and he's been on the show so many times. He's always willing to come on and chat about books and records and the Circle album and the book that followed that, which is now has a great new book with photographs that were never out before.
Hey, Steve, I got to tell you something.
Yeah, man.
You know what I found out last year after my brother passed away? And for people who don't know, my brother was a manager and record producer for the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, and he produced the Circle album, Will the Circle Be Unbroken? And I found out last year that the first recording of Will the Circle Be Unbroken was in 1915 in England by a guy named William McEwen.
And that's pretty weird.
That his name was William McEwen.
That's pretty weird.
Oh, no. Come on. How is this possible?
That's pretty weird, John. That's pretty weird. The new album, The Newsman, A Man of Record, is on Compass. I assume people can find it there. It's out now. It's been released. I assume if they search John McEwen, do you have a website where people can find out where you're going to be and what you're doing with an updated schedule?
What's a website? Oh yes, of course I have a website.
A website is when you're a duck and you look down at your feet for the first time.
Well, johnmcewen.net. You can get an album ordered there too.
Okay, good.
It'll be autographed.
It'll be autographed. That's worth a lot, man. John,
if anybody wants an autograph,
I think they should have one. So, well, John, I'm always happy to talk with you. I'm glad that we're back, that you're back, and we can talk about this stuff. And you probably have many things to do the rest of your day. So I'm going to let
I'm going to go see Dune too. Yeah.
Are you really?
Yeah. I can't wait.
Okay. Well, you go do that. We'll play, since we've talked about the cremation of Sam McGee. I'll let you go, watch Dune 2, and then I'll play the cremation of Sam McGee, and then we'll hook up somewhere down the road, John, I promise you.
Sam McGee is really a compelling thing. If you let it, if you're not into it in the first minute, give it another minute.
Well, it's like...
It's really a neat story.
It's a great...
Robert Service wrote it in 1907.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, just so... This is great. I'm glad that you're. I'm sure you have other projects. You told me about this last year, by the way. And just for the listener, John sent me cuts of this before. It was like a secret. And he said, listen to these. And I couldn't use them for anything, no purpose at all, just to listen to them. So when it finally became available that I could use it on the show, I had heard most of them and had a chance to be amazed by the things that I heard, because you were sending me just little secret stuff for a while, even before the final album came out.
Well, I needed an opinion. You know, I didn't... I thought they were good, but so what? Of course, I'm kind of prejudiced, I guess. Anyway.
All right, John McEwen. Thanks, man. I really... I appreciate you so much, and I'm gonna let you get on with your day, and we're gonna play for the audience the cremation of there's one. Let's do the creation of Sam McGee. But instead of that, I'm gonna play the cremation of Sam McGee, which I guarantee you is one of the creepiest feeling stories you're gonna hear on radio, I think. So all right, John, listen.
Oh, that's great.
Take care of yourself, buddy. I'll talk to you.
Okay, thank you. I'll talk to you, Steve.
All right, see you, bye.